young girls with bangs and hair over their shoulders. You add it up, it brings you down, but older, younger, father, daughter, power and virtue. On the Chill Room, on Kill Radio, dedicated to the Worcester Group. On Kill Radio.
Call it insane, call it feeling, call it jet lag, call it love, call it insane, call it feeling, call it jet lag, call it love.
All those reckless words for the simple things on earth. That's only life and how it works.
Thank you indeed for this definition of life.
Oh, not life. Only an image.
An image? What's that again?
The image is a pure creation of the soul. It cannot be born of a comparison, but of a reconciliation of two realities that are more or less far apart. The more the connection between these two realities are distant, the stronger the image is. It will have emotive power. Two realities that have no connection cannot be drawn together usefully. There is no creation of an image. Two contrary realities will not drawn together. They're both one rarely. Force and power from this opposition.
So out went the candle, and we were left dark.
So out went the candle, and we were left darkling.
An image is not strong because it is brutal or fantastic, but because the association of ideas is distant and true. The result that is obtained immediately controls the truth of the association. Analogy is a medium of creation. It is a resemblance of connections. The power or virtue of the created image depends on the nature of these connections.
Everybody is afraid of something.
What is great is not the image, but even very brave people.
Are you afraid of things that crawl? Are you afraid of some dogs? Are some dogs afraid of you? What about a pig? Were you ever afraid of the dark? Can the dark hurt you? Are you afraid of the things you don't know about? What you can't see, and what you think is hiding there? Or do monsters seem to crawl from out of the dark shadows? When the lights go on, are you still afraid? Can the dark really hurt you? Did you ever climb so high that you were too scared to come down? Or go so fast that you couldn't catch your breath?
Be my blue love. baby down, my baby down, my baby down, my baby down, my baby down.
The love of women is the most beautiful of all that mortals experience. Thou losest thy nights in cherishing youths who are ungrateful to us, beside their narrow flanks. Consider our luxuriant hips, broad hollow couches for lovers. Say above all, what human lips, except hers who wish it, can elaborate the pleasure? Why have I become lesbian, thou askest? Oh, what player of a flute is not a little? I am poor, I have no bed. I lie with her who wishes me, and I thank her with what I have. While yet small, we dance naked. Those dances, thou knowest them. The 12 desires of Aphrodite. We regard each other. We compare our nudities and we find them so pretty. During the long night, we inflame ourselves for pleasure of spectators, but our ardor is not feigned, and we feel it so much that sometimes, behind the doors, one of us may animate her companion who consents. How then can we love a man who is rough with us? He seizes us as girls and leaves us before the delight. Thou art a woman. Thou knowest what I mean. Thou attachest to thy light hands the resounding crotales, my dear Nescadica, and almost naked from thy robe, thou extendest thy nervous limbs. How pretty thou art, thine arms in the air, thy loins arched, and thy breasts reddened. Thou commencest, thy feet, one before the other, pose, hesitate, and glide softly. Thy body bends like a scarf, thy caresses thy shivering skin, and voluptuousness inundates thy long swooning eyes. Suddenly thou strikest the crotales, arch thyself erect upon thy feet, shake thy loins, advance thy legs and let thy hands, filled with noise, call all the desires in a band about thy turning body. We applaud with great cries a smiling over thy shoulder. Thou agitatest with a shiver thy convulsed muscular crew. Or whether thou undulate, almost extended, to the rhythm of thy mouth. Anthus, dancing girl of Lydia, has 7 veils upon her. She unrolls the yellow veil. Black hair spreads out. The rosy veil slips from her mouth. The white veil falls, revealing her naked arms. She releases her little breast from the red veil that unties itself. She lets fall the green veil. She draws the blue veil from her shoulders, but she presses upon her puberty the last transparent veil. The young men supplicate her. She tosses her head backwards. Only at the sound of the flute, she tears it up a little. Then suddenly, with the gestures of a dance, she culls the flowers of her body. Behold my roses, I give them to you. Behold my violets. Will you have them? Behold my fair curly parsley.
our time, it is broadly true that political writing is bad writing. Where it is not true, it will generally be found that the writer is some kind of rebel expressing his private opinions and not a party line. Orthodoxy, of whatever color, seems to demand a lifeless, imitative style. When one watches some tired hack on the platform mechanically repeating the familiar phrases, one often has a curious feeling that one is not watching a live human being, but some kind of dummy, a feeling which suddenly becomes stronger at moments when the light catches the speaker's spectacles and turns them into blank discs, which seem to have no eyes behind them. And this is not altogether fanciful. A speaker who uses that kind of phraseology has gone some distance toward turning himself into a machine. The appropriate noises are coming out of his larynx, but his brain is not involved as it would be, as if he were choosing words for himself. If the speech he is making is one that he has accustomed to make over and over again, he may be almost unconscious of what he is saying, as one is when one utters the responses in church. And this reduced state of consciousness, if not indispensable, is at any rate favorable to political conformity.
Away. I smile, and I smile, and I see you, and of course, Dear Cordelia, stay with him. What is thou sayest? A voice was ever soft and gentle and low. Excellent.
It's true, my lord.
Senator Tedman, Ted Kennedy.
Did I not sell it? I've seen the day with my good fighting falchion. I would have made them skip. Hello now. And these same crosses spoil me. Who are you? My eyes. Not of the best. That is.
Just a small town girl living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere. Just a city boy.
Their shadows searching in the night. Street light. Yeah, just find a
beneath me, like the proud horse whose rider first spurs and then pulls him back. What enemy do we now perceive advancing against us? You whom I ride now, as we stand pawing this stretch of paper.
In our time, political speech and writing are largely the defense of the indefensible. Indeed, things like the continued war in Iraq, etc., the dropping of atom bombs, these can be defended, these ideas, but only by arguments which are too brutal for most people to face and which do not square with the professed aims of the political parties. Thus, political language has to consist largely of euphemism, question begging, and sheer, cloudy vagueness. The inflated style itself is a kind of euphemism. The great enemy of clear language is insincerity, where there is a gap between one's real and one's declared aims, One turns as if instinctively to long words and exhausted idioms like cuttlefish spurting on ink. But if thought corrupts language, language can also corrupt thought. A bad usage can spread by tradition and imitation even among people who should and do know better.
At this sad time, we must obey. Speak what we feel, not what we ought to say. The oldest hath borne most. We that are young shall never see so much.
Right, sir!
Nor live so long.
I couldn't help remembering Pluggy's last words. Mr. Alien. The bad time of Chernobyl had long been forgotten. The motion picture industry was growing fast again. Paramount, Fox, Warner's, were booming. And so was the Canon Cultural Division. I was finishing the picture, or bringing this twisted fairy tale to an end, in a small editing place they had hired for me. The man in charge was named Mr. Alien.
Right, sir!
This can be no accident.
Right, sir!
Oh. Then I see a king dealing alone with his many subjects.
Right, sir!
So young, my lord, and true.
Like as the waves
like as
make
the waves
towards the pebbled shore,
towards the pebbled shore,
so do our minutes,
so do our
hasten
minutes
to their end,
hasten
each changing
to
place
their end
with that which goes before,
each changing place
in the sequent toil
before.
All forwards do contend.
All forwards do contend.
Nativity.
Nativity.
Once in the main of light.
Once in the main
crawls to maturity,
of light. Crawls
to wherewith being crowned.
So do all minutes.
Crooked eclipses
being
against this glory fight.
Crooked eclipses against
and the time world that gave.
Time
doth now his gift confound. Time doth transfix the flourish set on you. And delves the parallel
and delves
the parallel
in beauty's brow.
Feeds on the rarities of nature's truth.
And, the rarities
and nothing stands and not what the sight of love.
She's gone forever.
She's gone forever.
I know when one is dead, when one lives.
I know when one is dead.
She's dead as
when
her.
One lives. She's
Lend
dead.
Me a looking glass. If that her breath will mist or stain the stone.
Power and Virtue, tonight on The Chill Room on killradio.org, a reworking of politics, language, and music materials in order to see what happens when it is reworked. Because the questions still have to be asked, and they have to be tough, or they're not worth asking. Thanks for listening to The Chill Room and Kill Radio today. And stay tuned.